Hi, this is Ed Lerner, and I am delighted to be on Sci-Fi Thoughts. I write as Edward M., as in Mark Lerner. Be sure to spell Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R. Okay, with that information, you'll be able to find me in my writing and my books.
This is a continuing episode of a series about the vast cosmos of Edward M. Lerner.
My Interstellarnet trilogy was just re-released, so that's sort of fun.
Yeah, tell us about that.
I mentioned briefly earlier that I had an interest in how we would communicate with alien species, and that I had a novelette called Dangling Conversations that started with that premise. I had so much fun with that novelette that there was a follow-on novelette that took place a couple decades later when communications had advanced to a slightly more sophisticated level, and we had learned to trade messages with the aliens and started to develop what I call InterstellarNet, which is what the name would suggest, which is an interstellar-ranged internet.
This is like Comcast, but for the whole solar system. Is that what we're talking about here?
Not for the solar system, for us and neighboring stars. It's interstellar net.
Okay. All right. That's a good point.
Okay. And it turns out that it's not cheap to be broadcasting between stars. There has to be some motivation to do it, because how long can you stay motivated to say, hi, how are you, when it takes years to say, true. Fine, thanks, how are you?
There's
got to be a commercial motive. And in the first book in this series, which grew out of these earlier stories called Interstellar Net Origins, we deal with the growth and sophistication and conspiracies among the species as they set up interstellar commerce, because we can trade technologies, but it's got to be worthwhile for everyone, and no one wants to just give and not get something in return.
Right.
And you have to be careful with what technologies you accept, because if you get something that's too revolutionary, it can wipe out an economy in one fell swoop. So Interstellar Net Origins is about the evolution of this original trading network. Interstellar Net New Order, the second book, is about when enough trading of technologies between species enables one of them to develop a slower-than-light starship. And it turns out that meeting face-to-face is a whole lot messier than swapping messages. And then the third book, Interstellar Net Enigma, which you mentioned in the intro, which won an inaugural Canopus Award for interstellar writing, deals with an interesting coincidence, which is often used in science fiction, but is really kind of hard to explain. You know, in Star Trek, as one example, there are all sorts of neighboring species, and we all have about the same level of technology. And isn't that sort of random and surprising? Even stars that are different in age by hundreds of millions or billions of years, why do they conveniently have aliens with the same levels of technology as humans have? Well, the answer is authorial convenience. So that the conflict is believable.
I didn't see that one coming. Go ahead.
You know, if you have Klingons against Neanderthals, it's not much of a contest.
Right.
Let alone Klingons against trilobites.
Yeah.
Okay. So here I had these first two Interstellar Net books where the civilizations are nearby and at the same level of technology, more or less. If they didn't all have radio, they couldn't talk to one another.
Right.
In Interstellar Net Enigma, the enigma is, how the heck did such an unlikely thing happen, and what does it mean?
Okay.
And why do terrible things happen to people who ask those questions?
Oh, do they?
Indeed, they do.
Did terrible things happen primarily in the Enigma book, or is this something that happened in the earlier series?
That's in the Enigma book. Oh. When the main character in the Enigma book starts asking questions, and this comes out early in that book. The guy is celebrating his appointment as an historian for an entity called the Interstellar Commerce Union, and he's writing the centennial, I think it is. I may have the particular anniversary wrong, but some major milestone history of interstellar trade, and he's planning to make this odd circumstance one of the features of his history. He's coming home from the celebratory party his friends throw for this wonderful appointment he's gotten as the historian and the author. And he goes into a cab on his way home from the party. He comes out of the cab feeling sick and discovers he's disappeared for a month. When he comes out of the cab, I said he was sick. He explosively throws up. Everyone thinks he's been on a month-long drunk because he realized he's in over his head, and he's trying to salvage his reputation because at this point, no one wants anything to do with him.
Hmm.
So that's the premise that starts off Interstellar and Enigma. I will say that the three books, while they form a sequence, certainly can be read standalone, but like any good trilogy, they're better read in sequence.
Okay. Is it one character that travels through those three books, or is there multiple different characters in those different books?
The short answer is different characters. The slightly longer answer is because the first book is based on trading radio messages with nearby stars.
Yeah.
And then there's slower than light travel. Necessarily, things happen at a moderately leisurely pace, whereas some characters who appear in more than one book, there's an element of family saga about it.
Mm.
And I think the main character in Interstellar and Enigma is the fourth generation of a couple of characters who are the primary characters in the first book. Not everyone is part of the same family, but there is that continuity.
Okay. And this is something that probably needs to happen because the messaging takes so long. Is that the idea?
Well, yes, the messaging takes long. And even once people discover a means of doing interstellar travel, it's still slower than light. And I believe I had my ships topping out at reaching a third of light speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still a leisurely trip to the nearest solar system. And
yeah,
not all of the solar systems of interest in these books are Alpha Centauri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's play a visualize your reader type game. Do you think the same kind of reader reads all three of these books, or is there like different kinds of readers for these three?
Probably reasonably similar. They're all what the genre types call hard science fiction. I hate the term, but it is what it is. If listeners are not familiar with it, hard is intended to be a reference back to what used to be called the hard sciences,
right?
Physics and chemistry and the related engineering. It's sometimes misunderstood as meaning it's got so much science in it, it's going to be hard to read. That is emphatically not the point I want to make.
You mean you don't make them do homework?
No.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there is a school of thought that says, I suffered to do the research for this book. Now it's your turn. I do not subscribe to that theory.
Now let's go a little deeper. Does your typical reader, what do they enjoy? Like, do they have certain kind of hobbies or video games or computer things? What kind of is your typical reader? What things do they usually get involved with?
I think they would like anything to do with space travel. I think they would like anything to do with computer technology, since my background, as you mentioned, is both physics and computer engineering.
Yeah.
There's a lot of both of those things in most of my writing. I will mention in passing that there's a significant amount of biology in Life and Death on Mars, because how else could I handle the questions of, is there life there and what does it mean?
That's true.
Since that is not my professional background, I got involved with a medical doctor and biologist to make certain I got that aspect correct.
Okay.
But very broadly, I think anyone who likes the science fiction genre and reads adult-level science fiction rather than, say, YA, would be very comfortable with my writing.
Nice.
Now, when I exclude YA, it's not because it's X-rated or anything. It's just it might have more science in it than some teenage readers might care to read.
That makes sense.
To wrap this up here, I'm Ed Lerner. I write as Edward M., as in Mark Lerner. Be sure to spell Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R. With that information, you'll be able to find me and my writing and my books at edwardmlerner.com, my website, or blog.edwardmlerner.com, on LinkedIn, or naturally at Amazon.
And there'll be links in the show notes for folks to want to just click on it in your podcast player or on your computer. Check out the goodies in the show notes, and there you will find links about Ed Lerner's books and other things that I found while scrubbing the internet. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for easy access. If you're not using a podcast player and you listen to the show by downloading it from the internet, go ahead and go back to the website where you got the MP3, and there you will see the show notes. The series started at episode 278. If you missed the first episode because you're like my friend Zoe, go to your favorite search engine and search for Sci-Fi Thoughts Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R. And the search engine will find the series page just for you.